Power is in inflicting pain and humiliation. Power is in tearing human minds to pieces and putting them together again in new shapes of your own choosing. Do you begin to see, then, what kind of world we are creating? It is the exact opposite of the stupid hedonistic utopias the old reformers imagined. A world of fear and treachery and torment. A world of trampling and being trampled upon. A world which will grow not less but more merciless as it refines itself. Progress in our world will be progress towards more pain. The old civilizations claimed that they were founded on love and justice. Ours is founded upon hatred. In our world there will be no emotions except fear, rage, triumph, and self-abasement. Everything else we shall destroy. Everything. Already we are breaking down the habits of thought which have survived from before the revolution. We have cut the links between child and parent, and between man and man, and between man and woman. No one dares trust a wife or a child or a friend any longer. But in the future there will be no wives and no friends. Children will be taken from their mothers at birth as one takes eggs from a hen. The sex instinct will be eradicated. Procreation will be an annual formality, like the renewal of a ration card. We shall abolish the orgasm. Our neurologists are at work upon it now. There will be no loyalty except loyalty towards the party. There will be no love except the love of Big Brother. There will be no laughter except the laugh of triumph over a defeated enemy. There will be no art, no literature, no science. When we are omnipotent, we shall have no more need of science. There will be no distinction between beauty and ugliness. There will be no curiosity, no enjoyment of the process of life. All competing pleasures will be destroyed. But always, do not forget this, Winston, always there will be the intoxication of power, constantly increasing and constantly growing subtler. Always, at every moment, there will be the thrill of victory, the sensation of trampling on an enemy who is helpless. If you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever. George Orwell, 1984.
Yeah.
Liberty and freedom, so said Friedrich Hayek, have probably been the most abused words in recent history. Hayek was an economic theorist and philosopher who wrote books such as The Road to Serfdom and The Constitution of Liberty. While the statement is true, his own works only add to that abuse. President George H.W. Bush awarded Hayek the Presidential Medal of Freedom, one of the highest civilian awards in the United States. Hayek's liberalism was a reaction against socialism and really revolved around the freedom of capitalism. Less state power, more privatization of businesses, free market capitalism. The freedom of the individual to enrich himself at his neighbor's expense. Hayek had an exaggerated belief in human selfishness. What is meant by the term freedom? Can anyone have total freedom? Clearly not. It's necessary to define what you mean by freedom, because it certainly needs some kind of qualification. You can't, for example, no one could have the freedom to do something like flap their arms in the air and fly to the moon, because the laws of physics obviously curtail the possibility of doing such a thing. In Russia, the word they have that is nearest in meaning to freedom is more accurately translated as meaning license, and it implies a complete lack of responsibility, as well as the idea of just being able to do anything that you want to do. Freedom for one man limits the freedom of another man. For example, criminals, if they have the freedom to rob and to steal and to beat people up, then that impacts on the freedom of other people who will fear to go outside of their front door. In a way, if these sort of freedoms are restricted, then there is more freedom for the greater majority. Somehow, less freedom can be more. There's more freedom in a nation where people naturally get along with each other and don't exploit each other, compared with a nation where everyone is competing. In the most homogeneous nations, there is the most natural cooperation, compared with where there's multiculturalism and there's a lot of competition and free-for-all. These nations have a high propensity towards crime, which has to be suppressed by a police state.
Liquid thunder. Cry and burn.
In his book On Liberty, John Stuart Mill recognized two forms of liberty: negative liberty, which is freedom from coercion, and positive liberty, which is the opportunity to strive to fulfill one's potential. Mill described democracy as being the tyranny of the majority, and says that this is oppression that is harder to resist, since it's the tyranny of the prevailing opinion and feeling. The thing is that the majority are not ideological, they are indoctrinated. The majority do not form the ideology that becomes the prevailing opinion and feeling. That is something they pick up from those who control the supply of ideas and formulate them. The less well-educated people are, and the more dumbed down the culture becomes, the less free people become. Even something like altering language can enslave people, because language is used to express concepts. And if these words and phrases are lost or corrupted, then the concepts themselves become suppressed. Mill said that the only purpose for which power can be rightfully exercised over any member of a civilized community against his will is to prevent harm to others. Mill's no harm principle sums up libertarian philosophy. This may sound all well and good to most people, but really it's nonsense, since definitions of what constitutes harm widely differ. Mill felt that Charlemagne's violent oppression of barbarians was acceptable. He thought it was acceptable despotism, since he felt that Charlemagne knew what was best for them and was basically preventing them from harming themselves and others. Mill felt that backward, barbarous people, which included the Irish at the time, required England's civilizing rule, and that England should rule this way as a great advantage to mankind. Unsurprisingly, Mill was very pro-British Empire, so he epitomizes the hypocrisy inherent in libertarianism, humanitarian interventionism. Does this remind you of George Bush at all? So, Mill was utilitarian in his outlook, utilitarianism being the principle of prioritizing the greatest good for the greatest number of people, which is also the idea started by Jeremy Bentham, who Mills admired. This notion is effectively either going to mean that some dreaded tyranny by the majority that Mill said he abhorred would happen, or even perhaps to some dictator deciding what he thinks would be best for the majority is that most of them are sterilized or otherwise terminated. Ideas such as the harm principle and the greatest happiness principle are not at all paths to a greater freedom, but are no more than weasel words which sound good to the gullible, yet allow the worst kind of tyrant to become empowered. They are exactly the sort of principles that the American government would claim to be following when invading foreign nations like Iraq and secretly financing coups in other nations. Millions beg to differ that those actions are morally justified or bring any freedom. Anarchists see the notions of positive liberty and negative liberty as being inseparable, since by the absence of government, we would both escape coercion and at the same time be allowed to do as we please. The so-called left generally favours that coercion should be used by the state in order to grant positive liberty, i.e. the freedom to act as we please. But of course, there are a great many freedoms that the left would use that state coercion to stamp down on, while arguing that those freedoms, such as the freedom to express a belief in innate human inequality, are in themselves nothing other than an attack on freedom. The so-called right, by which we don't mean Nazis, but more like the Conservative Party in Britain or the Republicans in America, typically favours negative liberty in that they favour personal freedom and wish to decentralise state power. This personal freedom being the means by which capitalists have acquired power. Today's so-called right, however, are increasingly in favour of state power. Consider the neocons in the US, for example. It fits in with the observation that there was a plan to actually manipulate and take over control of the state itself by the very corporate powers that used positive liberty to build up their monopolies. So the two kinds of liberties are converging and at the same time vanishing to be replaced by tyranny, by money power. All the expressions of struggles for freedom, such as civil rights or the feminist movement, fit into the corporate plan to enslave us. These movements help to create a world in which ethnicity, culture, and the family have been exploded, women paying more taxes and becoming wage cows rather than mothers, and people reduced to being rootless individuals who are motivated by materialistic aims. So money now rules. Yet people don't feel as though they live in a tyranny, since they have the illusion that they can change their government in an election. They believe they have the freedom to change who governs them, when really all the major political parties are interchangeable. The politicians are chosen for being unquestioning and servile, bowing to the will of corporate money powers. Nationalist parties are growing in strength despite demonisation in the media, and they may yet threaten this setup. Mass immigration is one way to make such a challenge less likely, since the immigrants are hostile towards nationalists. Other freedoms that we suffer from are there merely to distract us from the encroaching oppression. We have the freedom to do all manner of trivial, mindless pastimes and decadent indulgences. We have the freedom to kill ourselves, but not the freedom to save our people. When the Twin Towers were destroyed in the terrorist attack attributed to Al-Qaeda, President Bush announced that this was an attempt to attack our freedoms and that the Muslim fundamentalists responsible were enemies of freedom. But what freedom was Bush referring to? The freedom to gorge oneself on fast food or to go out to a strip club? These things come to mind as classic examples. Hundreds of thousands of soldiers see these supposed freedoms as being something that it's their patriotic duty to fight to defend. And yet, even then, they don't consider the fact that it's not a threat abroad that challenges their culture. The attack is happening at home, within their own nation. And the very freedom they may think they are fighting for, whether to defend those Western decadences they're accustomed to, or to force other nations to enjoy these same liberties, are really not freedoms at all, but shackles. I watched the movie 300 recently, which tells the story of the historical event in which 300 Spartans fought the might of the Persian Empire for their freedom. They didn't wish to be forced into a multiracial empire, famed for its decadent indulgences. How times have changed! Now it is the inhabitants of the old Persia, the Iranians, who are the Puritans struggling against a multiracial tyranny.
when you die, and without asking why, can't you see what they do? They're grinding us down, they're taking our land that belongs to the clan. Not alone with a dream, just a want to be free, with a need to belong. I am a clansman.
In the name of freedom, Western nations are fighting in Islamic nations. The government dismantles laws to protect our freedom in response to the threat of terrorist attacks from the people who the US and its allies are supposedly liberating. Our phone calls, emails, and so on can be legally scrutinized by the authorities, supposedly to protect our freedom. We have CCTV cameras watching our actions, supposedly to protect our freedom. We will have to carry ID cards and have our movement logged to track wherever we are, to protect our freedom. We are to be protected against the enemies of freedom and democracy. Look at the Human Rights Act. This protects our freedom. You have the right to life, unless you're an enemy of democracy. Protection from torture and inhumane or degrading treatment, unless you're an enemy of democracy. Protection from slavery or forced labour. The right to liberty and security of the person. The right to a fair trial. The right not to be subject to retrospective criminal offences, unless you're an enemy of democracy. The right to respect for private and family life. Freedom of thought, conscience and religion. Freedom of expression. Freedom of peaceful association and assembly. Protection from discrimination. The right to free election, as long as you're not an enemy of democracy. But are the defenders of democracy really looking after the best interests of their populations? Are they limiting certain freedoms in order to protect others? No, they are not, because not only do we not have a democracy, but a dictatorship by culture-distorting money powers. Also, these people want only what's best for themselves. Our people have been indoctrinated into feeling loyalty and identity with this so-called democracy that permits only what weakens us. Many, like the liberals, are faithfully acting as useful idiots, believing that they are safeguarding some greater good, when really they are paving the way for global enslavement. The only rulers that ever cared about their people were those who were of their people. They were kin, and that is the origin of the word king. The king would be genetically related to his people, yet venerated, obeyed, and feared because of a perceived supernatural quality that made him seem to be chosen by gods. The king was seen as being of a higher rank because of a metaphysical character rather than merely his strength, intelligence, or courage. People would traditionally not feel oppressed by their king, who was seen as being clearly someone who was an organic phenomenon and part of the natural order of things. People did not see themselves as individuals who wanted to be free from their tribe and its ruler. What this shows is that for humans, being social animals and not naturally loners, the greatest sense of self-fulfillment and freedom from coercion exists only when we live amongst our own kind and feel we have a valued role to play within this. Selfishness, individualism, and egotism easily become freedoms that destroy the individual. Yeah.